You're listening to the Cultural Hall Podcast with your hosts, Richie T. Stedman and Lauren Johnson. It's a podcast about Mormon stuff.
Nephi! Emma! Samuel! Do you stand at the live righteously?
That's right. It is time for another edition, another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode 21.
We're coming home.
And all about missions today, all about being a return missionary. And we got something interesting for you coming up in the second and third block. We are going to be talking with three return missionaries who have since stopped going to church. They're not a part of the church anymore. Mm-hmm. And they all happen to be homosexual as well, so we'll get into that as part of it. But they all did serve missions, and so we'll kind of peel back the mystery as far as that goes. What's that like? How was it when you came home? You know, how did you deal with it with the church? How does your family deal with your homosexuality? And then what was it that, you know, kind of made you leave the church? So we'll get all of that in the second and third blocks, but I wanted to talk about your experience, Lauren, and also talk about my experience about coming home from the mission.
Yes.
So
everyone's experience is different.
Yeah.
I was 24 when I got back, 2004. Has it been that long already? And my parents came and picked me up, and two separate stories. This is actually very interesting, and I'll tell this story. I had a very successful mission for me personally. It was a success with what I wanted to accomplish, and I was nervous about going home and excited.
Why were you nervous?
I guess you could say I was nervous to leave. I was so happy on my mission,
mm-hmm.
and I was doing things that I knew were helping people, and so I was nervous to leave and start something new, and I wondered if I could carry that with me, and could I still help these people while I was home?
Sure.
And my parents came and picked me up along with my younger brother, and they picked me up at the mission home because I was only sister missionary leaving, so they all have a big sleepover the night at the mission home, but I was the only sister
right,
there.
Right, so that gets weird.
Yeah, so they're like, why don't you just have your parents come tonight
yeah.
for you? Yeah, I'm like, I got it. So we went to the Cleveland Hotel, and this is really interesting, but I couldn't read my scriptures. I opened my scriptures to read them, and I couldn't see the words. They were blurry. And I said that to my mom. I said, I can't read. I can't see. And she said, well, maybe it's because you were up all last night, because I had been up packing.
Yeah,
you
being
know?
Nervous and getting everything ready to go.
Getting
sure.
everything ready, packing, and had a lot of stuff that I collected.
It's amazing
over
how much you can accumulate.
Yeah, I was the sister that would help make the members help me move to each different area.
I'm going to need you to drive this.
Yeah. Could you haul this up next week?
Ugh, I hate that.
Could you take my juicer and just drop it off?
Yeah. Your juicer, really?
I bought a juicer.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
So that was and I remember thinking, well, what if something's really wrong? But the next day, and we spent a week there showing my parents Kirtland and all the historic sites and introducing them to all my favorite people, the VIPs of the mission.
Sure.
Yeah. And we got home and life was good. I went to Hawaii the week I got home.
Jeez.
With about five friends.
Yeah, I'd say good.
Yeah.
And all a friend trip too. So it wasn't even your family. You just got to go.
Right. And it was a girlfriend trip. No guys, thank heaven. So I could be white and pasty and 20 pounds overweight and not fit in my swimsuits and be okay. But I was like, hey, world.
Yeah.
I'm home.
Hey, what's up? I'm white and pasty. How do you like this?
Yeah. So, and we all passed around pass along cards. All of my friends. We
really?
Yeah, we did. And then we
in
even
Hawaii?
Had a conversation with somebody in Hawaii about the church. I said, we're all passing around 20. And we did.
Really?
Uh-huh.
In Oahu or where were you at?
We were in Maui.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. So we had a good time. Anyway, I got home. Also visited a friend in Kansas City who had moved there and visited the Missouri sites. And I noticed my eyes were still blurry. I thought, what is
you're like, I didn't stay up packing my stuff last
on.
Night. What's
yeah.
the deal?
I got mad at my friend. I said, Geneva, the lighting in your bathroom sucks. I can't put my makeup on. I have to come into your bathroom. And I still couldn't see, and they were blurry, and it was really odd. So finally, I got home from that trip, and I had been home from my mission I think just a month at this point, and my mom was headed to Costco, and I said, I need to get my eyes checked. Something's wrong with my eyes. I need to get contacts.
Up to that point, had you worn glasses or anything like
no,
that?
No. I've okay. always had great sight, eyesight, good eyesight. And so she said, okay. And we went to Costco, and she went around shopping, and I went to the free eye doctor.
Yeah, Costco known for their fantastic optometrists,
right,
by the way.
Right, right. He was a return missionary, too.
Yeah, good. Oh, good. Oh,
I think
good.
He had gotten home like at the same time. He had been good. There. He was like, oh, you just got back from your mission.
He's like, I served around eye doctors, so I kind of know what I'm doing.
That's exactly kind yeah. of was. Well, yeah. it was got even better, yeah. And he said, okay, well, tell me. I'm going to cover one of your eyes and read to me the letter that you see or what you see. And I said, where? And he goes, right in front of you. I said, I don't see a letter in front of me. He's like, really?
It's like, there's letters. There's letters, pal.
Right. Well, better than letters, there was a letter. There was one giant E at the front. It was huge. It was uh-huh. it was the whole wall. It was an E, and I could not see it with my eye. He took the off my other eye, the
like protector
blinder,
thing. Yeah.
and I could see it with mm-hmm. the other eye. And so the whole time, he's just so sweet. Picture you're just ideal BYU RM. I
so
think he got married 3 weeks
shirt.
After
okay.
he got home, and he was telling me about his new wife and his mission. And he was like, okay, well, yeah, so you can't see. And he kept trying to switch.
He's like, how about now?
Right.
What about this?
And I was like, nope.
Nope,
no,
still no.
No. Finally, I see him go and take a textbook off of the shelf, and he opens it up, and he's like, okay. And then he says, does anyone in your family have an eye disease? Well, ironically, my father is legally blind, which I think I might have mentioned before. Mm-hmm. My dad has a disease.
You mean to tell me I'm legally blind?
Well, that's kind of what he told me. He finally said, I said, yeah, my dad has Stargardt's disease.
Sure, macular degeneration.
Yes, and he looked up Stargardt's disease in his textbook, that great doctor, and said, finally looked at me and said, you know, I think you have Stargardt's disease.
Yeah, nice.
And you're legally blind.
Awesome. But yesterday I was legally able to see.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. So I... my eyes were dilated at this point,
yeah.
and so I had to have the doctor help me dial my mom's number because Costco's so large, and I can't see, and I'm blind, and I just burst into tears as soon as my mom's on the phone.
Dad gave me blindness.
Right. That's cool. That's what my mom said to my dad. You yeah. told me this wouldn't happen. Yeah.
You promised me.
And all my dad said was, you're going to be a great blind date. And he went legally blind.
And he was wrong on that account, too, by the way.
He found out that he was legally blind directly after his mission in the Philippines.
Huh, okay.
So I'm like, this is sounding way too familiar.
Yeah.
So moving forward, totally depressing. But luckily, my bishop at the time was an eye doctor, one that graduated from Harvard, so a lot better than Costco's
yeah,
RM.
A little better, anyway.
Yeah, a lot more. And he had me in, and I was going to doctors. I was up at the Moran Eye Center, yada, yada, yada. Turns out that my eye doctor decides to do an MRI. I have multiple sclerosis. It's optic neuritis that's making me go blind, so my optic nerve.
Okay.
I can see now. Not 20/20, but I can drive and
it's
I'm okay.
It's better for you that
yeah,
you can't 20/20 with uh-huh. me being right in front of you.
But so that was what happened to me when I got home from my mission. So when I think of coming home from my mission, I think of getting diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And someone has said to me, because the moment the symptoms started was the last day of my mission. And people have said, do you feel it so unfair? You just spent a year and a half, doing the Lord's work. And the moment you're done, it's like he's rewarding you with MS.
Yeah.
And I've never looked at it that way. I've actually thought the opposite. I thought I could have been sent home early. Or I could have never been able to go. And it's interesting that I went late, too. And I had felt this urge that I had to go on this mission, and I had to go then. And it makes me wonder what would have happened if I had waited any longer or hadn't gone. I think that it was a blessing. I think he preserved me almost to do his work. And so that was a really cool story, and I do believe that. I think that as soon as I was done, he's like, okay, thank you. But now, yeah, you do have to deal with this worldly thing. I have held it off as long as I can. But there you go. So that was what it was like for me to come home. I was kind of sick. But beyond that, I was fine with the social stuff and whatever. Because I had seen so many elders come home that I'm like, I do not want to be like that. That I kind of prepared myself to not be depressed and not to have too high of expectations and to to be ready for the real world a little bit. Anyway.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like I'll have to share my experience with coming home from the mission at a different point. So, because our guests are here. So coming back in the second and the third block, we'll be talking with three gay return missionaries coming up here on the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
All right, it's back in the second block of the Culture Hall, episode 21, and as we promised you, we now have three return missionaries here in the Cultural Hall with us, and we just want to get to know you guys. This is going to open a lot of questions that I know that both Lauren and I have, but also questions that people have sent in to us. Again, you can like the Cultural Hall on Facebook. Just search The Cultural Hall. Or follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. But we've got Justin and JD and Brad in here. So let's take a minute. Just give us kind of a as you put it, Justin, off the air, a Reader's Digest version of your involvement with the church and then to post-mission and to today.
All right. Well, I was actually raised in the church up in Cache Valley, up in Logan, and I kind of always just knew that's where I was headed, even though my family was inactive. I was the only active member of my family, so when I was offered a scholarship to go to Ricks College, I, of course, thought that was fantastic. They wanted to pay for my schooling and let me do theater.
That's BYU Idaho, for those who don't know, for you younger folk.
And that tells you how old I am.
Yeah.
And there it is. But so I went up there, and after one semester, I just thought, you know what, this is what I need to be doing. So I actually left after one semester, came home, back to Paradise, put my mission papers in, and got called to the England London mission, and off I went. So it was great, you know, grand adventure. And then after the 2 years there, I came back home, and again, I kept doing the things that in my mind I needed to be doing to be happy and all that fun stuff that you do. And so I became a seminary teacher for 2 years, and, you know, subsequently that's kind of led to where my life is now.
Seminary teacher in middle school, or were you high school?
High school.
High school.
High school. Mm-hmm.
I
taught at Logan High for a year, and then I taught at Bear River High School for a year.
Okay. And then you, as you mentioned, you alluded to, how old are you now?
38.
So that's a little while ago.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
And what has the last few years brought you?
The last few years, I actually relocated from Cache Valley down to Salt Lake City, and I've been working for Desert Star Theater. I do their marketing, their graphic design. I'm also one of the actors on stage. So it's kept me very, very busy. It's been my family. Really, it's become my home. So
cool. All right, JD.
Hi, my name's JD, and and I grew up in a very devout LDS home, and in Southern California. So it's very different from Utah. And
what do you think the biggest difference is? Just to take that kind of jaunt?
That there aren't expectations. Like, you're LDS, and it's held differently. Like, it's not always joked about at every event that you go to, and it's not discussed in the grocery store, and it's not promoted everywhere that you are. It's your lifestyle. It's who you are as a person, and it's not publicized everywhere, and not everybody knows about it. So it becomes more intriguing for those, I think, that aren't members, because they want to know more rather than having it shoved in their face all the time. And it's like, well, this is who I live with. And then they get their own assumptions of who the LDS members are. And so I think that's a huge difference between here and there. And so I grew up LDS, attended seminary, did everything, and then I was actually performing at Disneyland at the time I turned 19, and my family really wanted me to go on a mission. And I was like, I don't really feel like I should go on a mission. Like, I work at Disneyland, and so I see enough people in the day, and they can get to know who I am and whatnot from that. And
so you're able to, you felt like you were able to share your testimony and your faith that way?
Yes. Yeah.
Were there that many opportunities that
way? Yes, there could have been had I had been aware of my testimony at the time. At the time, I wasn't really so knowledgeable in the church, and I didn't really know. It was just something that I did. And it was something with growing up that I just knew this is what I was supposed to be doing. So that's what I just did it. And my mom had actually suggested, she was like, why don't you pray about going on a mission? And if you feel like you have to go, then go. But if you don't, then you don't have to.
Oh, cool.
And I felt like I had to go. And so I kind of just knew that I needed to go on a mission. And if I didn't go then I wouldn't go at all. And so I went. And that's when I turned in my papers and I went on to the exotic state of Ohio and the exotic
Cleveland
mission.
Three Cleveland, Ohio missionaries in one room. This is too much to handle.
Yeah.
And it's Zion here on earth, let's be honest.
You know it. And I loved my mission. I learned a lot. And it was actually a great experience because I learned more about myself and the church that I didn't know before going. Like, I grew so much as a person while I was on my mission. And then I came home, and that's kind of when all the self-discovery happened. And a lot of the things that I had learned on my mission, I brought home, but there were a lot of things that I was conflicted with as a person and who I was. And so I decided to move back out here to Utah to return back to school at Weber State and try to figure things out. And in the meantime, that's when I kind of just was trying to explore both sides of the coin, I guess you would say it, on the heterosexual side and the homosexual side, and trying to figure that out. And then eventually, when I was about 27 is when I came out. And then, yeah, it's all history from there.
And what years did you serve then?
I served in 99 to 2001.
Okay.
All right, Brad?
All right. Well, I grew up in St. George, Utah, also in a devout Mormon family. And I developed a strong testimony, or what I thought was a testimony and appreciation for the church pretty early on in life. I'd say about the time from when I was 14, everything was kind of self-initiated. I was very active in the church, and I always looked forward to serving a mission. I was really excited about it and tried my best to prepare for it. And I got my mission call, served in the Germany, Munich, Austria mission from 2005 to 2007. It was amazing. I loved every day of it. I still count it as the greatest experience of my life, just a growing experience and the people I met there. Truly amazing. I loved it so much that I went back a year later and did a study abroad in Bremen, and just loved every. Growing up, I loved every thing that the gospel brought into my life and the mission brought into my life. And it probably wasn't until about a year after my mission, or maybe 2 years, to where I really kind of started struggling being gay. I knew I was attracted to men my whole life, but up until that time, I really wasn't focused on dating or relationships. I think it was the time when I started pursuing marriage or wanting a relationship that I really realized, I guess, how strong my feelings for men were. And that's when it kind of became a struggle for me. And I came out just about a year ago, so I'm still, I guess, relatively new. And
yeah,
it has been a rough, I guess, year and a half. I guess it's been kind of a rough year and a half, but
a roller coaster, would you say?
Yeah, I would say, but it's getting better. So,
well, now that we've had a chance to kind of meet you guys, we're going to come back in the third block, and I want to make sure we have a good amount of time. We're just going to dive in. We got questions, and want to talk to you guys about everything to do with that. So, coming back in the third block here of the Cultural Hall.
This podcast is brought to you by Sponsor Me Slim, your New Year's resolution solution. Lose weight 5 times faster with easy, nutritious meals and a successful weight loss coach. Meet with Denny Hill from The Biggest Loser. Call today for your free assessment, 801-652-7538. Be sure to ask about our holiday specials.
All right, it is time now for the third block, and it's question time, you guys. I want to say, first of all, thank you so much for being willing to come in and talk to us about this. And, hopefully through all this, through the questions and the different things that we'll talk about, we can really begin to kind of understand and to see and to, I guess it's my hope to have a greater love and understanding for people that are, you know, that are homosexual, people that serve missions and everything that falls into that. So my question, first of all, is, and Brad, you kind of spoke to this a little bit, is you said that you always knew that you were attracted to men, and that's the case with all three of you?
Yes.
So how was that and serving a mission? Because you're with a guy for, you know, for 24/7. And I hated that part of that, you know, because I'm like, I just need space. I just need time. But, I mean, were there issues of that? What was that experience like? If you just want to go around, start with Brad, I guess.
For me, there weren't really any issues. I mean, again, I realized I was attracted to guys, but it really didn't pose a struggle for me at all on my mission. I guess even like I said, even after my mission, it didn't really I didn't really struggle with it for a while. So,
okay,
I don't know.
It was interesting because for me, it wasn't so much a struggle. It was odd that during those 2 years, it wasn't so bad. Sure, the attraction was still there, but it wasn't like constantly weighing on my mind. It was kind of those things of, this is what I'm here to do, and it's not about the sexual attraction. It's about getting the job done. And so it didn't, it was interesting how much of a struggle it wasn't, and I guess as compared to what it could have been.
Sure, because it seemed, you know, it'd be like, as I was talking to a friend of mine, telling him that we were going to do this podcast, it'd be like, yeah, it'd be like if your companion was a young, cute girl. I mean, essentially, I mean, there's no difference. And then to just be able to focus and do the work. I think that's interesting. Justin?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because I grew up in Paradise, which is a very small town of about 1,200 people. And so I was really never exposed to it. I didn't know
to homosexuality.
Homosexuality. Okay. I didn't know what it meant to be gay. I had no real foundation of understanding for that. So even on the mission, I was always just so focused on doing what I needed to be doing that I never realized that I was attracted or that it just never became an issue. You know, some of the other missionaries would joke, they were like, did you just see that girl walk past? And I'd be like, what? No, I missed it. Because I was just completely oblivious. But the same was true. I was oblivious to all of that because I knew why I was there and I had gone for a reason. You know, I felt like I really needed to be there. I had a purpose. And so the other part of it just never became an issue. I never thought about it. You know, but then again, I didn't really think about it when I was younger either. I think I always knew, but it just never was an issue.
So, JD, you mentioned that you did know that you had an attraction to men before you served your mission and you were deciding to go. Did that play a part in your decision? Were you thinking, gee, I might be gay, or gee, I know I'm gay, should I do this? Or what was the thought process in understanding that you were attracted to men?
That's interesting, because during that time, I actually tried to come out a little bit. And I tried to be like, okay, I think I'm probably gay. But I didn't know. And so I guess my hope was, is knowing that I was going on a mission was to figure this out. But it wasn't so much, oh, I'm going to be surrounded by a bunch of guys on a mission. Yes, this is really going to help
I'll
me
really
out.
I'll really discover
right.
whether or
and
not
here
I'm
I am.
And my type and everything.
Right. It wasn't about that at all. It was, I didn't really know that that's exactly what I was going through. I was kind of a little oblivious to it. And I wish I would have known more about it. But I couldn't confide in my family. As much as I love them, it's just something that we don't talk about. And so it wasn't like I could
sexuality
be like,
in general.
Right. And so it wasn't like, well, this is what I'm feeling, but I don't know how to interpret it. It wasn't like I had somebody to turn to get that answer. And so I guess by serving a mission, I was hoping to get some kind of help.
Was it a feeling of like wanting, and I hate to use this term, but I know that it's a thought process with some people. And this question goes to all of you if you have anything to speak on it. Was it a feeling of maybe this will cure?
And
Justin's nodding.
Yeah.
From my perspective, yes.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what I had always been told, was that if you do it, then it will cure you, quote unquote. But I soon learned that it wasn't so much about curing, it was about accepting.
Sure. Justin, you're nodding your head.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was, as you know, growing up, I think I should have realized sooner, you know, like my brother, he would get Sports Illustrated and he'd always look through the swimsuit issue. And it was funny, that never like rang the bells for me. But the underwear models in the same issue were the things that I always stopped and looked at, but I never had made the connection. And then as I went through high school, I started to kind of understand. And I thought, well, I've always been told that if you dedicate your life to the gospel and you completely throw yourself into it, yes, you can overcome anything. And so part of the mission was very much that. It was, I'm throwing myself in. I'm going to give myself over 100% to this. in hopes that God will fix this or take away what piece I, you know, feel like is wrong with me. And then I taught seminary kind of for the same reason. And I hate to say that, but it really was. It was like, okay, well, I was good for those 2 years. I didn't have any, you know, inclinations, any problems. I didn't think about it. So if I come home and I become a seminary teacher, then it's going to be like an extension of the mission, only no, for the rest of my life. The problem with that became, after 2 years, they offered to send me to BYU to find a wife.
Yeah.
And that wasn't going to work so well.
Yeah.
I want to know why you wanted to be cured. Like, was it because you wanted to be a good Mormon? Was it because of your family? Was it because you wanted to be straight because you wanted children and a wife and that's how you pictured your life? Why did you feel you needed to be cured?
Let's start with Brad, because...
Or did Brad even, did you feel like you needed to be cured?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I think maybe one of the biggest reasons, and it doesn't really have any much to do with this church exclusively, just to society in general, is this deemed as unnatural. Like being homosexual is unnatural, and it's frowned upon. And so I think just as a, just being a member of society, I didn't want to be gay because of that. And especially, I mean, in living in Utah and a lot of the population being members of the church that even magnified that. And then, I mean, you hear comments in church. I mean, I was active just like these other guys were. And anytime sexuality came up in church or chastity, it was always taught that like homosexuality is one of the most evil things, the sins that one can commit. And so no one wants to, be attracted to things. That's one of the worst things you can be doing.
Yeah. No one wants to open, be like, yep.
You don't want to raise your hand
me.
In
I'm
Sunday
the...
school and say, yeah. Well, wait a minute, because I have, that, you know, I have these feelings.
Yeah. And I mean, I did... And, I mean, a traditional family life is attractive to me, and it still is, you know, a husband and a wife and children, and that is still attractive to me, so that as well.
Mine was hugely also with society, but mainly with my family, was to be a disappointment, because I am the only boy of my family.
Carrying on the name.
Right. And so it was a huge thing, and again, going back to my parents being loving, not necessarily accepting. And so I was always afraid to talk about it. And so I was afraid of being a disappointment to them and to their expectations of what I could be, being the oldest and the boy and carrying on, you know, my example and being that example to my sisters. And yeah, that was my biggest fear.
Well, you know, and I have always thought, man, I would have loved to have been a dad. But, you know, that just doesn't seem to be in the cards. But the reality is, I would sit in high school at lunch and listen to people who were all members of the church like I was, but they, you know, the jokes they would tell and the things they would say that were very derogatory often. And I thought, but I don't want them to say that about me. And so it becomes kind of crazy. It somehow gets tied to your self-esteem. And you start to go, oh my gosh, if this is really who I am, those things now apply to me. And you don't want that.
Derogatory towards homosexuals.
Yeah, very much so. You know, and then everybody just expects, like my mother and I had a conversation just 2 weeks ago, actually, about my whole coming out process. And she was like, I remember crying for 2 solid weeks when you first told me. And I said, Mom, it's kind of like you had to mourn the loss of the expectation of that wife and the children and the white picket fence. I said, and don't you think I had to mourn that too? Because I had been raised to believe that's what I was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that I knew inside there was something very different about me. And so I went through that mourning process just in a different way, but she had to as well. And, you know, you just don't want that. You know, nobody likes the idea of mourning anything. And mourning something you expect your child to be or you expect yourself to be, that's hard. So you do fight. You hope that you can cure. You hope that you can fix and make it go away.
What were your coming out experiences like, each of you guys?
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was a good one.
Yeah.
You know, the hardest was for me to figure it out. You know, I was really, really lucky in a student ward I was in. I had a bishop who had a brother who had been, you know, who was gay. He had actually passed away by the time I knew this bishop. But he was very, very understanding. And, he, you know, we'd sit in his office almost every Sunday. I was like, man, this just feels like part of my Sunday now. I go to church and then I come sit in your office. But he, you know, he told me, he said, you need to figure out first how to love yourself. He said, then we can deal with the rest. And if you want, we can try to fight it. We can send you to counseling, which I did for 3 years. off and on over the course of 3 years. I went to three different counselors because I didn't like the first two, and finally was like, no, I'm not paying you. Mm-hmm. So I found one that I liked, and you know, he and I worked through a lot of things, but it was him that ultimately set the tone for my coming out, because he looked at me one day and he said, you know what? I don't know why you're fighting, because you're never going to fix this. It can't be fixed. It's innately who you are. He said, if I were your bishop, which I'm not, he said, I would tell you to keep fighting. He said, but looking at you as a human, he said, I need to tell you, just be happy with who you are and embrace that. And after that, I just started telling people. I started telling friends who, by and large, were pretty accepting and really gracious. It was my mom that was the hardest to tell. And it was over dinner. We were sitting there and
pass mashed potatoes, I'm gay.
That was literally the conversation. And I sobbed. I sobbed. And she just looked at me. She goes, why are you crying? And I'm like, because I just told you that I'm gay and I'm not going to be the person you expected me to be. And she goes, yeah, but you're still my son. Oh, and ultimately, I still love you. And then she cried, you know, which of course made me cry, because you don't expect that. You know, I had seen so many friends, their families disown them and tear them down for being gay, because they're not different. The kids are still the same people. My personality didn't change. My sense of humor didn't change. Just that one aspect of me came out. And I just, you know, I'd seen so many families push their kids away, and I expected the same. Wow. And so I was gracious, you know, grateful that my mother was so gracious about it. She, you know, she was really sweet.
Before we move on to JD really quickly, you said you had this amazing bishop, that he was a good bishop, and that you confided in him. And that sounds wonderful to me. I love to hear that. And then your counselor did say, if I were your bishop, I would be having to say to you to fight it. Do you feel that as a Mormon bishop, he said that he felt that he had to tell you to fight it? Or was he giving you an option with what you wanted to do?
Oh, man. I don't know. I know that, you know, through different callings I had when I was active, you know, it was often thought within the church that you did need to fight, or you needed to at least live the celibate life, you know, and that has changed a lot over the last, you know, 3-4 years, mm-hmm. which is really a fantastic thing. You know, and obviously I'm older, so I went through this at a different time. And so I think in his thought process, he was saying, you know, if you were in my ward, I would tell you to keep on this path. But the reality is, as, you know, a trained psychologist, he did not believe that was the right path, which I thought was very interesting, which obviously was a conflict for me because I had to sit and weigh the two sides. But ultimately, you know, when he said, you come on back, I'll help you start the coming out process, that really for me was the eye opener. It was like, obviously he gets it. He understands.
And so your counselor was LDS.
He was very, yes.
That's
very
nice
so.
To hear that coming from an LDS therapist.
Oh, I, you know, it made the difference for me. I don't know that I would have come out when I did had he not said that.
Hmm. JD, your coming out experience?
Mine was an adventure. Church-wise.
He's smiling.
Church-wise, I actually had really great leaders. The bishop was really nice. And
this was in California, or was this?
This was actually here in Utah.
Okay.
I did it all here in Utah. I was trying to get away from California, so then that way it wouldn't impact my family. Like, it wouldn't go back to them, so then that way I could just take care of it on my own and then deal with them on my own time. When I came out, I was actually engaged to a woman.
I didn't know that.
Wow.
Yep.
Hence the smile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bless her heart. A super sweet girl, and I still love her dearly. She bore with me. There were a lot of accusations prior to it all going down, and there was a lot of talk and whatnot, and she put up a fight, and she would fight it and tell people no, and I was right there with her. And then when I came out, it was about 3 days after we had gotten engaged, and I was like, I don't feel it is fair for you the most to be hurt, and for me to act like, oh, it's non-existent and we just won't talk about it. If we just sweep it under the rug, it will go away.
Sure. Like happens a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and for her, she also was fully aware and had instances where she knew people that had gone through this. And so she was afraid of experiencing it herself. So eventually I just gave up and was like, look at, this isn't fair to you and it's not fair to me. And there's no point of everybody getting hurt in the end. Like, because in my mind, I kept thinking, you know, if we get married and we get married in the temple and then we have kids, eventually it's just going to go away and I won't have to worry about it. Or maybe if we can have a couple kids and then eventually after the kids are all grown, then I can deal with it. But right now I need to figure out what's going on. And I was like, I don't know if I can wait that long. And the longer I wait, the more hurt it's going to make. And so I was just like, here it is. And I came out to her. Somewhat. I wasn't fully committed to it.
I might be.
I was like, so this is kind of what's going on. And it really hurt her a lot. And that was the hardest thing for me, is to watch her hurt. And then I kind of just talked it out with her. And then my parents had actually come out here for a general conference that year. And they were going to work with us on our wedding plans and all this stuff. No. And so I went to the hotel that they were staying at, and I was like, and I just unloaded. Like, I went in weeping, and I had lost sleep, and I couldn't eat, and I didn't know how to approach it. But I was like, it's like a Band-Aid. You just got to rip it off.
Uh-huh.
And so I went in, and I just sobbed on my mom's shoulder, and she didn't know how to take it at first. And my dad flew in the next day, and then we kind of just somewhat briefly discussed it, but not really. And so, yeah. And personally, it was really, 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 really hard. But church leader-wise and that sort of stuff wasn't as hard. Because then afterwards, I went and I talked to the bishop about this is kind of what's going on. And he was really attentive, and he wanted to help. And as he would always put it, he was like, I want to bring you back to the fold. And me, I wasn't so open-minded about it. I wasn't like, oh, okay, well then let's talk about all these things. It was like, no, hold on. Let's talk about the fold in a minute.
Yeah.
But let's try to figure this out first. And it's like he didn't want to deal with it that way. Though I knew that he wanted to take care of me and he wanted me to be okay. But yeah.
Do you feel like when he was saying come back to the fold, he was just saying or want you in the fold? He wasn't saying be straight, was he? Or was that what he was?
I don't really know what his intentions were. Personally, I felt like in bringing me back to the fold, it was let's just bring you back to church and don't act upon it and don't do anything about it. And but let's just get you here. And it was like, oh, okay.
And I guess I ask those questions a lot because so many people have accused religious leaders of any faith as being insensitive or so it's interesting to hear how you perceived your leaders being. And it's nice to know you both had nice experiences with them. But Brad.
All right, Brad. Well, I kind of separate my coming out experience into two different categories. And it's like coming to terms with the church and with other people, and then coming to terms with myself. And as far as coming to terms with the church and other people is concerned, I also had really positive experiences with church leaders. And for the most part, with friends and family, it was, for the most part, a positive experience. I did feel that my religious leaders were understanding, but only up until the point of, or to the mandate of either living a celibate life or, you know, facing excommunication or being forced to leave the church, which I didn't want. And I always just felt, oh, it's easy for you to say to live a celibate life when you're able to spend the rest of your life with the person you love.
Sure.
I just felt that they really didn't understand that. And so I was really struggling with that because I did have really strong faith in the gospel, and I wanted to keep that in my life for the rest of my life. But of course I, you know, saw the dilemma in being gay and wanting to have a gay relationship with someone whom I love and being an active member of the church. And so that was a real struggle for me. As far as coming to terms with other people, all my friends were nothing but supportive. Really the only people who took it really hardly was my mother and my grandfather, her father, with whom I'm really close. For a time, they were probably the most unsupportive people. And I don't mean to put my mother and my grandfather in a bad light. They're terrific people. But that was probably the hardest thing for me, was the disapproval of my mother and grandfather and what I was wanting to do or curious in pursuing. So that was a real struggle for me. And then just coming to terms with myself, again, being gay was something I didn't want to be. And no one likes being something they want to be,
sure.
whether it's being lazy or you know, whatever it is. And so I really didn't like that. And so I was really trying to change that, again, through talking with bishops and stake presidents and, again, kind of like, I guess, finding a cure through the gospel. So that was really hard for me. But eventually I did come to terms with myself, and that's still kind of a work in progress. I mean, there's still some work that needs to be done in that regard. But
are any of the three of you still active?
No, I'm not.
No.
So let me ask you this then. we've had actually on the podcast Mitch Main, who is an openly gay individual. He essentially living the celibate lifestyle, but he recently called to a Bishop Brick out in the Bay Ward out in San Francisco. And there are also several homosexual people who will still continue to go to church. So I guess my two-part question, and again for the three of you, is what is it that keeps you out from the church? And maybe you could combine them even. What is it that keeps you out, or is there something that within the church could change, or that you see being changed that would have you come back to church? Or is it at this point, is it, you know what, I made my choice, feelings are hurt, and I couldn't go back? We'll start with Justin and then work around.
Yeah, wow. You know, really, when I came out, it's been about 12 years. So, I mean, it's been some time. And I did leave the church with the mindset of, this is the choice I'm making. Here goes. I'm choosing to be able to embrace my life, embrace who I am, embrace what I, you know, now realize I am. And at the time, I had changed wards, so I had a different bishop at that very point. You know, I didn't have the one that had been so supportive, and the new bishop wasn't near as supportive, unfortunately. And he said, well, if you do act on this, we will excommunicate you. And so, you know, when you're younger, you kind of sometimes do impetuous things. And I was like, well, fine, if you're going to excommunicate me, I'll just take care of it first. And so I actually wrote and had my name removed from the records of the church because I didn't want anyone to have power over me, because I had felt for so many years they had power over me. And I was like, no, you don't get to decide. I let you decide for me long enough that I needed to be doing these certain things. So you don't get to decide this. And I didn't want my mother to have to live through the idea that, how's your oldest son? Well, he's been excommunicated. because you know that's going to come up in church on Sunday. And I was like, no, she's not going to have to say that. And so I took a very decisive stand and said, no, I'm done. And I don't hate the church. I don't hate that bishop. I don't hate anyone. It's very good for my family. My mom is still very active. My brother and his family and his kids are very active. And I see how wonderful it is for them. But for me, at this point, I live by a simple philosophy that if I have love for the people around me and I'm a good person and I am trying to do good things and put good out, good will come back. And that's really where my spirituality now lies. And I think that's probably where it would stay.
So there's nothing that the church could, if something within the church changed, that you'd go, hey, I'm back in? Or,
you know, I really don't know. I think that would have to be a situation where, you know, I'd have to look at it at that point. Mm-hmm. Do I think that's going to happen? Probably not.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, I don't think that it will, but I could be wrong.
Now, not being a member, do you ever attend church, whether it's with your mother or for a friend who's speaking?
Oh, yeah. And I try to go up when my nieces and nephews, you know, for their baptisms or things like that. You know, so, yeah, I still do go occasionally when, you know, something's going on, if there's a special occasion. But, it's not like I've cut ties completely and said, no, we're done.
Yeah. JD?
I do not attend church out of respect. A lot of it is what it comes down to. Because I know how many people, and this could be an assumption, but I know how many people it makes uncomfortable when there's somebody that's gay around. And I know that a lot of people struggle with their children. Like, they think that it's going to attack their kids.
Well, it's contagious, you know.
Right. And so it's hurtful, but at the same time, it's respectful, because it's like, I don't want to teach an example to your kids that you're not wanting them to learn. Because it's bad, And so in turn, you know what? Then I will just remove myself from the equation. And I will do that to respect your family values and what you are teaching them. That's fine. It's, you know, God is everywhere. So it's not like I have to be in church in order to get him.
Sure.
And so that's where a lot of it comes down to of why
so,
I don't.
So
attend.
If there were like a gay singles ward, you'd be back in?
Oh, yeah. I would totally go. And I think a lot of it comes down to if the church would be more accepting towards the gays and, you know, have them participate. The other thing is that you can't participate. Like, you can't hold a calling. You can't do anything. You kind of just show up. And it's like, well, awesome. I'm glad that I get to sit there and listen to everybody else talk and do all these things. And granted, they'll be fun and exciting at activities.
Mm-hmm.
But you can always tell when there's those few that are like, I don't really know how to treat you. I'm no different than anybody else. And yet, a lot of times it's like they don't know how to deal with you. Like, you got something going on.
Yeah.
And you're like, I swear that if we just shake hands, it's just shaking hands and
yeah.
not trying to make a pass at you. And it's not going to go through your skin and you're going to become gay overnight.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be okay.
I've got the gay.
Right. Right. And that's what a lot of times you can just feel it. And so it's hard. And so that's where if they would just become more accepting of it and just know that we're just like everybody else, then it would be fine. Like, if I could hold a calling and maybe play the organ in church or sing a song in church or teach Sunday school one day and know that, yes, it is going to be different. Because when it comes down to marriage, how do you deal with it and how
sure.
do you tackle those topics? But it's not a matter of, well, let's change the gospel doctrine to fit my lifestyle. It's more or less, why can't I teach what I'm needing to teach when it comes down to it?
So you used a pretty powerful word, though, when you began, and you said, I know that people are uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
with me. What's happened in your life for you to know this? I mean,
I know it because I remember even as a kid in my priest quorum, It was at a time that the show Rent had come out. We'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
The musical Rent came out, which dealt with some homosexual issues. And I remember one of them asked me, would you ever do a show, because I do musical theater, would you ever do a show where you had to kiss a guy? Oh, like, how do you answer it? But then everybody started joking around about, well, if you do that, then you're gay and you can't do that because that's wrong. And so then it becomes really awkward for everybody because then they try to joke about it. But you can tell that some of them don't deal with it very well.
Yeah.
And they, if you say one thing or do another, I've had people avoid talking to me. Once they find out, it's like, I'm not, well, that's great. We used to be friends, but I don't know if I can accept this. So I'm not going to deal with it.
That's interesting because you have Mitch Main on the other spectrum, and there are obviously perhaps some more open-minded wards out there depending on their area, but you have him teaching the youth Sunday school class as an openly
yeah.
gay person. It's just interesting the differences that you can find in people's...
And it is interesting because I look at that same situation, and I had heard that broadcast as well and thought, how fortunate for him to be able to experience that. Unfortunately, though... not everybody's like that. Mm-hmm. So you can find those one or two places that it's great, but then what do you do about the other 90% of the
right.
people that are out there?
All right, Brad.
I guess the reason why I'm not active today is kind of twofold. One reason being I don't feel comfortable being associated with an organization that is against who I am, and I say against, and what I mean by that is just disagrees with that, not necessarily that they're hostile towards it, but that they're against it. And I just didn't feel like I wanted to participate in that. It's like, why, if I disagreed with the draining of Lake Powell, what, I wouldn't join the Sierra Club. You know, it's just
yeah.
kind of that I just, logically just it didn't make sense to
yeah, okay.
participate in an organization that was like, you know, against homosexuality. And that was kind of the issue of being gay. But aside from that, as I've come out and as I've maybe distanced myself a little bit from the church, I've kind of opened my mind a little bit to doctrinal issues. Like, for example, before I kind of stopped going to church, everything I didn't understand, I would just kind of push it aside and say, "Oh, I just don't understand."
You know, I'll understand that later, or that's not for me to understand.
Yeah,
right,
I just need
now
to have faith. But like after I stopped going to church, I kind of started thinking about those things, and instead of just saying, "Oh, it's okay, I'll just understand it later," I kind of investigated those things, and just on a doctrinal base, a lot of things I disagree with the church. Again, it has nothing to do with my attitude towards the church. I love the church. I think it's a great organization, and anyone who lives by, you know, most of the principles of the gospel, it leads to a happy life. But just some doctrinal issues. So aside from being gay, in the time that I have come out, I've just reflected on different doctrines that the church teaches and believes in, and I've kind of developed a different ideologies. So one part has with being gay, the other part not so much.
We ask everyone this that comes in the cultural hall with us, what is your favorite thing about your faith? And you can interpret that however you want it to be.
We'll let the person that raises their hand first go. Hurry.
You know, I think for me, you know, like I said, I've created a belief system for myself now that, you know, it's do good, good will come back. And it's kind of maybe the karma idea of things. But I believe that faith brings happiness. You know, for me, that's what it is. I believe in a better world. You know, maybe I'm a little idealistic that way. I believe in a better world. I believe that good is out there, and I have faith that it's out there, and I hope that it comes back around. And so it brings happiness. It brings contentment.
Mine would be love, because I know for me, even though I may not know everybody in the world, I love everybody, and I tend to trust them pretty quickly. And in turn, I think that's what a lot of my faith is about accepting and loving no matter what, and that it's going to be okay. And that, you know, there's always a purpose to what we do.
And I love I'll interpret faith as just the church being brought up in the gospel, things I learned what faith is. But my thing I like most about it is the focus on being a good person. I mean, do you read the scriptures, Bible and the Book of Mormon, and you know, talks in general conference, and I really am uplifted by it. I mean, like I said earlier, I really do believe that if you practice those things, that is a recipe for a good life. Just following Christ's example, developing charity and love and kindness. I just find happiness in trying to apply those kinds of principles in my life.
Go ahead.
I want to really understand this. Richie and I are a part of this whole church, this Mormon church, trying to understand. The people that are going to be listening to this are people that have homosexual friends or brothers and sisters. They're going to be active, non-active. What do you have to say to members of the church to help us understand our homosexual brothers and sisters more, to understand what we can do? How can we, what do you want to say to help us understand?
You know, honestly, for me, it's just love us. Because honestly, we are the same people. I didn't change at all when I came out. Everything about me is the same. You just now have that one little teeny puzzle piece that fits down in the corner somewhere that explains how I'm different. Just acceptance, you know. Love and acceptance is the biggest thing. We're no different. We have the same dreams. We have the same hopes. Like I said earlier, I would still love to be a dad someday. I would love to have that house and the white picket fence. Just for me, rather than a wife, it's going to be a husband. And that's really what I want. I want that family structure. I'm no different. It's just part of my equation looks a little different on the outside, but on the inside, we're exactly the same. Just love us for who we are.
Tear down the walls. There's a lot of walls that go up amongst members. And I learned this actually through my father, who is very not okay. But he sat down with me one day and said, "You know what? I was putting up all these walls because I wanted you to be the way I wanted you to be. And you weren't." And he's like, "And now I know that I need to just get to know you." And so you got to break down the walls of pride and put it all aside and get to know everyone as they are. Get to know them instead of, "Oh, they're gay and I'm done," and check out. You've got to be invested and at least get to know them a little bit more.
And yeah, to those who know people who are struggling with being gay, I would just simply say just be there for them. That was the thing that helped me the most. To be honest, it wasn't reading the scriptures or praying. It was my friends who said, I'm here for you. I'll help you in any way I can. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to like it. You don't have to do it. Just accept them, be there for them, show them the unconditional love that that is taught to you, or how you're supposed to act towards people, and just be there for them. I think that'll help them the most.
As three returned missionaries who are now not going to the church or have had their records removed, do any of you regret your mission?
No, not at all.
Absolutely not.
Not at all. I wouldn't change it for anything in the world.
Well, how did it help you then?
It taught me to be self-reliant. It taught me that I am stronger than I think I thought I was, if that just makes sense. Wow, that was quite the statement. But,
yeah.
You know, I realized that I'm a much stronger person and I am able to accomplish things and achieve things if I let myself. And it really did teach me to rely on me as a person, but it also taught me to rely on the ideals of acceptance, love, charity, and really put those things into play for me. I have a better understanding of those things, having dealt with other people who are in very different stages of their lives. And so that was a really eye-opening experience and a very good experience.
Mine's exactly like Justin. Like, exactly. It really taught me about me and what I was capable of.
And I really felt joy helping other people. And I'm very much a people person. Relationships, people to me are the most important thing in the world. And I developed some amazing relationships. I still keep in contact with a lot of people from my mission. And I met some of the most amazing people in the world who have influenced my life in countless ways.
One last question that we ask everyone that comes on. If you could pick your own church calling, now, that's not how it works, obviously. And you don't go to church at this point, but if you could pick your own church calling, what would it be?
Yeah, I would say this, but
Brad's laughing.
There isn't even a calling for this, but you know, in my student ward, there kind of was. We called it the entertainment director. That's what we called it. Mm-hmm. I was basically in charge of parties and road shows, and that was fine with me.
Love
and that's
it.
What I would be.
I have no idea. I really don't.
Oh, come on. You want to be the chorister, JD, and you know it.
Oh, chorister, no. Bless their hearts. I know what they go through. And trying to wrangle up all those people every week is a tough job. I don't know. I guess, sure, I'd be in charge of the special musical numbers.
Cool.
Well, I do like activities committee. That was fun. But I guess to be different from Justin. I actually would like to be a kind of counselor person, not a bishop, but just having gone through the process of, I guess, through the repentance process in the church and knowing what it feels like to be considered unworthy and whatnot, I think I could relate to people who are struggling with certain things, not just homosexuality, but other transgressions. And I might be able to understand a little more than maybe some of the ecclesiastical leaders do. And so I really would like to help people in that regard. That would be, I would like that.
Thank you guys so much for being honest, open with us. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And that you'll take the things you heard into your daily lives.
And that when the time comes that you'll drive home in safety.
And we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall.